Let's go ahead and begin our study today in Genesis 41:46, where Joseph has just been promoted to the position of vizier, the steward of all of Egypt. He is the right hand of Pharaoh, which, strangely enough, means he is now the supervisor of his old boss, Potiphar. And I must confess, I'm a little bit curious as to how Mrs. Potiphar took that change in Joseph's status, since she clearly lied about the attempted rape that landed him in the pit. But since we don't have the opportunity in Scripture to discover that, let's move on to what we do have in Scripture. Genesis 41:46, Joseph was 30 years old when he entered the service of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. That tells us then he's been here in Egypt for 13 years. Some of those years he was Potiphar's servant, and some of those years he was a slave at the pit, even though he was functioning as the top trustee during that time period. The year, if you're interested in such things, I believe to be 1895 going into 94 BC. And the pharaoh, I believe, is Senuceret II, who is fairly well known for establishing a whole bunch of irrigation at the Fayum Oasis, about 40 miles southwest of Cairo, so that he could increase agricultural production. And I honestly believe it was Joseph functioning in the position of vizier who took the lead on that development of the Fayum Oasis, so that everything produced during the 7 years of plenty would be increased itself by these actions. We know that he's going to take 20% of everyone's crops and put it into storage. So when the famine is over, that means we'll have 140% of the average production of those good years. So the more he can produce in a single year, and the bigger that production is, the better off their storage is going to be when the seven bad years starts. So the second half of verse 46 says, "And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went through all the land of Egypt." So he didn't just stay up in the Delta. He is traveling everywhere in the land of Egypt, even up into Upper Egypt, which is south along the Nile River. During the seven plentiful years, the earth produced abundantly. And so he gathered up all the food of these 7 years, which occurred in the land of Egypt, and put the food in the cities. He put in every city the food from the fields around it. So he's got localized storage. That's going to make distribution in the famine years a lot easier. Joseph stored up grain in great abundance, like the sand of the sea, until he ceased to measure it, for it could not be measured. So they've got tons and tons and tons of storage areas, and they are full. He's having to build more storage areas. And even though the Egyptians are well known in this time period for being sticklers for accounting, the scripture says it got beyond the ability to account accurately for. Verse 50, "Before the year of famine came, two sons were born to Joseph. Aseneth, the daughter of Potipherah, priest of On, bore them to him." So you remember, when he became the vizier, the Pharaoh gave him in marriage the daughter of a very prominent priest of Egypt. And so he starts his family. And I am confident in telling you, I believe Aseneth would have been encouraged by Joseph to give up her belief in the many gods of Egypt and to embrace his faith of the one and true living God. And Joseph may have adopted some of the cultural aspects of Egypt. He's going to be dressed like an Egyptian. He's going to be speaking in the Egyptian language in a later story, so much so that he is assumed to be Egyptian. But he maintains his Israeli faith, the faith of Abraham, Yitzhak, and Israel. And so Joseph called the name of the firstborn son Manasseh. Now, Manasseh has the sense of forgetting. And it says here, "For he said, God has made me forget all my hardship and all my father's house." So he now feels that because of what his brothers did, that life is gone. He has no expectation of going back to Canaan. He is, shall we say, happy, satisfied in his job and in his life in Egypt. He's gotten past the bad things that happened to him as being sold into slavery and the drudgery of that work when he first began in Potiphar's house. And then he's forgotten about the lie in the sense of he's not accounting it a big deal anymore, that was told about him that landed him in the pit so that he had to, again, probably start at the bottom and do a lot of hard labor until he could finally work his way up to trustee. He's forgotten all of that. So when his son is born, he names him, "I've forgotten. I'm not thinking about that anymore." And then he has a second son, and the name of the second he called Ephraim. And Ephraim has the idea of fruitfulness. And the text goes on to say, "For God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction." So these two sons of his will be part of the tribal makeup of Israel, the nation, later. And the story as to how they displace their father in a positive sense is going to come up later. Verse 53, "The 7 years of plenty that occurred in the land of Egypt came to an end." So by my calculation, the years of plenty would basically be the harvests of 1894 through 1888 BC. And the first really bad planting season would have started in the fall of 1888. Because in the fall, there are huge monsoons in the interior of Africa, down by Lake Victoria. And these monsoons flood the upper headwaters of the Nile. And then the Nile is engorged with all of this water. It erodes places up in the start of its tributary system and takes all of that fresh sediment down and deposits it along the banks of the lower Nile until it hits the Delta region, and then it dumps a whole bunch of this sediment in the flood areas of the Nile. And it is into that sediment, as the waters kind of start retreating from that flood stage, that the Egyptians plant their crops. This is called the annual inundation of the Nile, and Egypt depended heavily upon it. Well, starting in the fall of 1888 BC, that inundation didn't happen. Apparently, the monsoon season did not hit in the region that it had before. Maybe it was deviated from the path. We know that the entire weather system of the old world must have been disrupted, because Canaan will also experience a famine. And they depend on weather systems coming off of the Mediterranean. And Mesopotamia seems to also suffer a famine at this same time. And they depend on some of the same Mediterranean systems. So this is a disruption of the weather patterns that affects the entire Middle East. Verse number 54, the 7 years of famine began to come, as Joseph had said. And so this is going to strengthen his position of leadership, because all 7 years of plenty happened exactly as he said, and then boom, right on schedule, the seventh growing season is hit hard, which means that the spring, the harvest time, the spring and summer of 1887 is going to be bad, and they know it's coming. There was a famine in all the lands, but in the land of Egypt, there was bread, because Egypt had been warned with Joseph interpreting the dream of the Pharaoh. Egypt is positioned for taking care of its own citizens, as well as citizens from other surrounding countries, such as Canaan. Verse 55, when all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to Pharaoh for bread. And Pharaoh said to all the Egyptians, go to Joseph, what he says to you, do. And so when the famine had spread over all the land, Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold to the Egyptians, for the famine was severe in the land of Egypt. So those who maybe did not have agricultural abilities themselves, maybe they worked in other industries, they're the ones that are suffering with the famine. And so they need to now get grain for their daily use from the public storehouses. Now, Joseph is selling it. He is not just simply giving it away. And this is going to be important to a later part of the story. Verse 57, moreover, all the earth came to Egypt to Joseph to buy grain, because the famine was severe over all the earth. And then we transfer our attention to what was going on in Canaan, where Jacob, Israel, lives with his 11 remaining sons and their families. Chapter 42, when Jacob learned that there was grain for sale in Egypt, he said to his sons, why do you look at one another? And he said, behold, I have heard that there is grain for sale in Egypt. Go down and buy grain for us there, that we may live and not die. Now, more than likely, this is happening in the middle of the summer, perhaps later summer of 1887 BC, because they would have had a failed crop themselves in the summer, in the spring going into the summer of that year. And then they would realize, we've got to plant some of what we did harvest this fall in order to be ready for next year, which means we're going to need more than what we have in order to eat and plant. And so because Egypt is selling grain, that's where they need to go. Verse number 10. So 10 of Joseph's brothers went down to buy grain in Egypt. Now, Joseph is, as I said, 38 years old, which means that all of his brothers are in their upper 30s and lower 40s, except for Benjamin. Benjamin is approximately 16 years or so younger than Joseph. So that means that he's about 22, in his early 20s. He's just now starting his family. Verse number 4. But Jacob did not send Benjamin, Joseph's brother, with his brothers, for he feared that harm might happen to him. So he's not taking any chances. He's already lost Joseph, and Benjamin is in the encampment in the tent city with him, raising his family. There's no way in the world he's going to give his final son of Rachel, his beloved Rachel, into harm's way. Verse 5, thus the sons of Israel, 10 of them, came to buy among the others who came, for the famine was in the land of Canaan. Now Joseph was governor over the land. He was the one who sold to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brothers came and bowed themselves before him with their faces to the ground. So things happen exactly as God foresaw that they would happen. Joseph was actually at the distribution center where his brothers came on this particular day, because he's traveling all over this land of Egypt. So the fact that he was at this particular distribution center on this particular day was only known to God. God orchestrates things to make sure that this story takes place. And so his brothers bow before him exactly as the dreams predicted back when he was a teenager. Verse 7, Joseph saw his brothers and recognized them. Now, they just look older. They were in their late teens and 20s whenever they sold him into slavery. And here they are now in their late 30s and early 40s. So they just look like older versions of themselves. So he recognizes them right off the bat. But he treated them like strangers and spoke roughly to them. So he treats them suspiciously. And he's doing this not to torment them, but as we find out later, to test their attitude. Part of this is going to be very easy for him to do because he is taking on the role of an Egyptian. He is speaking the Egyptian language. He is dressed up as an Egyptian high official. And when he talks to his brothers, he uses a translator, someone who speaks to them in the Semitic Hebrew tongue. And then they speak back to the translator, and the translator then speaks to Joseph in Egyptian. And so it goes back and forth exactly like that. And so they see him talking in Egyptian, and he's being kind of stern. They can tell that from his appearance. And then they find out that this is what he's talking about. Says to them, "Where do you come from?" And they said, "From the land of Canaan to buy food." Joseph recognized his brothers, but they didn't recognize him. And that, again, not a bit surprised. He was only 17 when they sold him to slavery, and they expected never to see him again. They expected that he would live a really hard life as a slave and never be able to get out of that position. So here he is in a high position, dressed in very fancy Egyptian clothing with all the accoutrements of his office. He's clean shaven. He might be wearing one of those little fake beards that were in vogue at the time for the Egyptians. And he's got no eyebrows and no hair on his head, but he's wearing probably the headdress of an Egyptian high official. So he looks Egyptian to them. Not what they would expect for Joseph. So Joseph remembered the dreams that he had dreamed of them, and he said to them, "You are spies. You've come to see the nakedness of the land." So he accuses them of gathering intel as to where Egypt is weak during this time period, to either sell that information to those interested in taking advantage of it, or perhaps they actually are part of a larger group wanting to come in and raid Egypt during this famine time. So he accuses them of being bad actors, as we say. And they said to him, "No, my lord, your servants have come to buy food. We're all sons of one man. And we are honest men. Your servants have never been spies." And then he said back to them through the translator, "No, it is the nakedness of the land that you've come to see." And they said, "We, your servants, are 12 brothers, the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. Behold, the youngest is this day with our father, and there's one who is no more." Now that's an interesting description of their family, isn't it? First of all, they say, "We're all brothers of one man who lives in Canaan. So we're a family concern. We are not involved in any type of political process here. And we are honest men. We try to do what is right." Now that is interesting considering what they did to Joseph, isn't it? But what they did to Joseph, we will discover, has haunted them. And it seems to have changed their bad attitudes. So they say, "Our youngest brother is still at home with dad. And then there's another brother who's, he doesn't exist anymore." Notice that there is at least the hint that they believe he might have died somewhere as a slave. Now Joseph said back to them, again through the translator, "It's as I said to you, you are spies. By this you shall be tested. By the life of Pharaoh, you shall not go from this place unless your youngest brother comes here." So he wants to test their cover story. At least that's what he's wanting them to believe he's doing. What he really wants is he wants to see his baby brother. His brother was a newborn, certainly no more than a year old when Joseph was sold into slavery. So he has never seen him other than as a baby. And he'd like to. So verse number 16, he says, "Send one of you and let him bring your brother, while you, the rest of you, the nine of you, remain confined, that your words may be tested whether there is truth in you, or else, by the life of Pharaoh, surely you are spies." So he says, you make this claim? Well, we can certainly test it out, can't we? Nine of you will remain in custody here, because I don't trust you to be running around on my territory. One of you will go back, get your baby brother, and bring him back here to prove to me that your words are true. And then, verse 17, to make it clear that he is serious, to put the fear of God into them, if you will, he put them all together in custody for 3 days. So he lets them have a timeout. Now, I must be a little bit honest here that he might have felt that they kind of deserved a little timeout considering what they did to him. And I doubt that he is being mean to them in this. They are probably being kept in a place where they can rest fairly comfortably. They certainly would have access to restroom. They would have access to food and water. It is nothing like what they did to him when they dumped him into the bottom of a dry cistern and ate a meal while he was begging and pleading and crying for them, and then sold him into slavery as his pleading and crying continued, with the expectation that he would never see him again. So even if this is a bit of a payback of a sort, it is a very gentle, mild payback. Verse number 18. On the third day, Joseph said to them, "Do this and you will live, for I fear God." Now, in this case, it does seem that Joseph had a change of heart in the 3 days as well. He got to thinking, maybe I overacted in my plan. So listen to his change of conditions. "If you are honest men, let one of your brothers remain confined where you were in custody, and let the rest go and carry grain for the famine of your households. And then bring your youngest brother to me, so your words will be verified and you shall not die." So he now says, you know, instead of all of you staying here and one going, I want only one of you staying and the rest of you going. And by the way, I need you to go ahead and take some grain for your family, because he knows they're not lying. So he knows that his father and all his brothers' families are in need of food and planting material. So he changes the conditions to help them out. And of course, they agreed quickly to this plan. Now, we've run out of time, so we can't get into the next part of the story just yet, and it's very, very important. So I would encourage you to go ahead and mark your place right here and ponder upon how God had prepared for this time period many, many years earlier.